Hey, and welcome to another episode of The Baked Bear. It is episode 41. My God, playoff hockey. Our Bruins are up 2-1, 2-1 after 3 games, so obviously lots to talk about, including our captain stepping up. Gotta talk Jake DeBrusk. Lots to say about the defense, officiating, and a bunch more, of course. I'm gonna check in on my high take just from last week. We'll see how that one's going. I do have my high take and haiku for this week, and I'm going to talk out the goalie rotation, and especially its relation to Game 4, which also ties into the one cue that I got, so let's go. I'm Jay Pike. The Baked Bear is presented in partnership with 6342 Productions. You can find me on Twitter at @my_Bruins, the podcast itself at The Baked Bear Pod. Always love to hear what you're feeling and thinking so we can talk it out. And don't forget to leave a rating and a review. Follow, subscribe on, whatever platform you get your pods. I gotta stop calling these the quick hits because that's just not how it works anymore. But like I said, my God, playoff hockey. I know, I was really thinking about it. I was like, during the regular season, like, we understand, we are conscious of the fact that playoff hockey is a whole other beast in every possible way. We know it. We say it. Man, I can't wait for playoff hockey. It's so intense. I mean, the regular season is good, but my God, the playoffs. We know the facts of the matter, but I don't think that within the knowledge, like, we can actually remember and, like, bring up the feeling of watching playoff hockey. It's like the game becomes visceral. It's in your bones, your stomach turns just at the sight of your opponent moving in past the blue line into your zone, because that means anytime that puck's heading towards your net, oh shit, that could be a goal. Let alone when it's a high danger chance that's coming, right? And you don't just give a fist pump or a hard clap for a goal. No, you jump for goals in the playoffs. Don't be afraid to love it. Don't be afraid to let yourself enjoy it, especially during the stressful moments. You know, it can be a fleeting, angry bitch sometimes, that playoff hockey. So, you know, enjoy it while we can. This is why we watch. So yeah, it's been 3 games since we last spoke. Our Bees winning the odd-numbered games. We're up 2-1, which is a very favorable position to be in. Statistically, historically, all of that kind of stuff. If that means anything to you, you know, stats are great, but they don't mean anything in the moment, that's for sure. But you still gotta be feeling good. I know I am. You know, I can acknowledge that there's a ton of work left to do. Not a thing is guaranteed. Not a thing is even implied, or I wouldn't even call anything likely at this point. You know, I understand playoff hockey, but I'm going to be happy about the position we're in right now. Great wins in games one and great game three. You know, we nearly stumbled backwards into an undeserved win in game two. We could have won that game. We wouldn't have deserved it, but we could have won that game. And there's always going to be doomsday fans. Doesn't matter how many games you get up or how far ahead you get, but hopefully you're not letting them get to you too much. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Come on. Question. Which king is atop the playoff points leaderboard? False. Brad Marchand is atop the playoff points leaderboard. Yes. Our captain, Brad Marchand, 6 points in 3 games, leaving him tied with McDavid. That's not bad company for McDavid to keep. Brad had 2 goals just last night as I'm recording this, so if you're listening on Friday, I'm talking about 2 nights ago, including, of course, the game winner. It came, like, I think it was, like, within, was it, like, 14, 15 seconds? Oh, God, was it that quickly? Anyway, it was really soon after that bloody pinball puck that bounced its way past Swayman and tied it up at 2. Brad's still got that shot in him. I don't think he can pull it off quite as often as he could, as maybe 5 years ago or so, but it's still there. My God, I think he wants this series, right? I don't know, something about him. He's feeling the more responsibility, but he's stepping up with it. I'm enjoying that very much. Like, he's been really good through every game. Even in 2, you know, maybe that was his weakest game, but it was every Bruins' weakest game. right? But in game three, like, that was peak Marchand. We got almost every little bit of what makes him him. He tormented the shit out of Tyler Bertuzzi, and it was hysterical. I couldn't get enough of it. It almost felt like it was a like a sidekick duo that are there just for comedy in a movie or something like that. Like, it, I was there for it, and watching Bertuzzi just get angrier and angrier and more frustrated. He was clearly off his game, right? I tweeted out that Brad had outratted Bertuzzi, and I love it. It's a lot of fun. But then you saw all of that, but then you also saw the Brad Marchand who's going to score the game winner, you know, throw his team on his shoulders back up into the lead, and then also put the, or not the icing on the cake, but, you know, I don't know, put the last thing on the cake with the empty netter to finish it off. And even on his way back to the net, or back to the net, back to the bench, reminding his guys they still had work to do. That's our captain, baby. Oh, we should mention as well that he's also now the Bruins' all-time leader in playoff game-winning goals. Seriously, is Marchand going to end up like a top five all-time Bruin when this is all done? You know. Oh, and side note, let's stop using the word if when we are discussing Brad Marchand in the Hall of Fame. It's a mortal lock. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. So let's just skip that and move on to the real conversations. Goalie rotation, working out so far, I would say. Goaltending has been fantastic through three games. I thought Omark was great in game two. He was clearly not in the top 10 reasons that we lost that game. So, you know, I it's been working out. Lots more on the goalies a little later, though. Let's keep the good vibes going, though. I got to talk about the Leaf blower himself, Jake DeBrusk. Yeah, I heard that too. The Leaf mulcher himself, Jake DeBrusk. All Jake does is whoop Leaf ass in the postseason. It's like a very specific form of greatness, but one that I have a great respect for. He's got 5 points, putting him just one behind McDavid and Marchand, of course. Three of them goals, all of which have come on the power play. Holy shit. A Bruins power play. 5 for 10 in this series. 5 for 10. If I had told you that a month ago, our power play in the playoffs would be moving at a 50% clip, you'd have called me all kinds of unkind things. Yet here we are. And Jake has been a big part of the reason why I think the power play has been that good, man. He has been tenacious. He's like the tenacious JD, and he's been it through all three games. Even in game two, he was still one of the better players on the ice. Is he becoming one of those guys that you, like, he's on the roster for the playoffs, not the regular season? I can't think of an exact comp off the top of my head, but I feel like there's guys out there like that. You know, it's like, why are you paying him this much? And then the playoffs come, and it's like, oh, right, that's why. We don't care about game 36 and game 42 and game 21 and game 2, and they care about the playoffs. So while the contract may seem, I don't know, odd based on regular season output, that's not what the guy's there for. I don't know. That feels like what Jake is becoming, and I feel like you pay that guy. I'll take a guy who's going to, you know, step up his game in the playoffs every single fucking time. Give him the, I've seen 6x6 out there, 6 years, $6 million per out there. That seems reasonable to me, you know. And, you know, if Jake wants to be here, he's part of this Bruins culture. We know he's not going to be squabbling with them over a few $100,000. That must be nice, but we can talk about that another time. And all of this is off-season talk, actually, so let's just move the fuck on. Leaving behind the incredible Leaf mulcher, Jake DeBrusk. Bruins Twitter actually was nuts for Marchand last night. Absolute ton of fun. Like, seeing him go just full Captain Rat King. You know, the fans were fucking into it. But when Jake gets the fans riled up, it's not bigger, but it's got a different tone to it. I don't know, it's not one of like getting as pumped up as Marchand gets you. It's more of excitement in a like a parent who has a quiet, you know, maybe unconfident child, right? Then the parents always like, oh, you can do it, you can do it. And then all of a sudden it's like, look at what the kid's doing, and they're out there with that confidence and they're being them true selves. The parents gotta be pretty excited. That's what it feels like the Bruins Twitter gets like when it's Jake. I think it's similar with Freddie as well, but it's definitely with Jake. Really protective of him and want him to, you know, be who he is and who we know he can be. And we're seeing it right now. So maybe in November, February, you know, we got to remember these days right here for Jake because he's been awesome. Also awesome was JVR last night. He looked good. Like, he had a little pep in his step. I would run it back with him again on Saturday. I really, I would, and I'd be feeling like a goal might be incoming because he should have got one, I think, in game three, to be honest with you. But he's, I don't know, he's another guy like Beecher, came out, happily proved me wrong because I wasn't loving his game near the end of the year either, and I was not excited about him necessarily being back, especially in the lineup with Pat Maroon. It's, you know, there's only so many old slow guys you can have on your team. You know, but I think our Bruins understood that. But Pat Maroon also in game three completely won me over. Is his vicious reaction to Domi bumping Swayman and knocking him off balance and down onto the ice. And yes, my friends, it was not a dive. It was not the flop. It's someone on skates, wearing goalie gear no less, losing their balance and falling because they're bumped and hit when they're not expecting it for any reason. This isn't strange. It's not unique. But regardless, Maroon defending Swayman, you know, like he was in a World War II movie and he was defending his child, was amazing. And that lit Bruins Twitter up in 1,000 fun ways. Anything goalie stuff always gets Twitter going. But when you got Pat Maroon just spit screaming over, you know, wanting to just rip Domi's head off, which I'm perfectly fine with. If, you know, Maroon wants to knock out mid-Domi there, I'd have no problem with that. Pasta and Mac, kind of lump them together right now. I feel like they've both been good. There's been moments of greatness, moments of, oh shit, right, this is, you know, the elite guy we know he is. But I think the tighter ice in the playoffs, I think their games have kind of shown that a little bit. I feel like Pasta's feeling the crunch. I'm not worried. I'm not even complaining. I'm just kind of saying, you know, it's, I think the point is we're still up 2-1 and scoring and winning. And I'm sitting here saying, you know, I'm praising Pat Maroon and JVR and Jake DeBrusk and I'm at Pasta and Mac and like, they're good. Of course they're good. But we have the higher expectations as well. So, you know, it's funny how things work out. I'm not worried about them. We know they're both going to, you know, be great most of the time. Johnny Beecher, as I mentioned as well, he's proved me like 5 different kinds of wrong, and I'm here for it. He scored the first goal. You know, clearly he heard me talk about him. I think I called his offensive upside a black hole, and I think he took that personally. He's also been killing it at the dot, which is really great because it is, you know, something that we have some really bad games with. So, but beyond that, like offensively, using his skating especially, I think between his face-off ability and I guess now he's shown like he can put the puck in the net. With that, I think he's a bit of a lock for the lineup for at least a little while. Now, I know Zaka's putting in a lot of tough minutes. So I know he's not lighting up the board. I think he's got 1 point. But I feel like at some point, like 1 point from Zaka in 3 games, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like quite enough. And the 1 point even came on that, that's that one, oh yeah, his 1 point is that one beautiful pass. You know, I don't know, he had a couple opportunities in game three, the early shorthanded one. He's gonna have to pot and finish some of those, you know, if the we're going to keep going in the playoffs, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, that's, we need him to be able to pot some of those, you know, those could be some difference making goals, some insurance goals, you know, we're going to need some of those from him. So, again, not worried about Zacha, you know, look at how we're doing, and he is playing great. It's not like he's not. It's just that I need to talk this one kind of in a circle until I'm not really sure on which side I'm arguing at this point. But, you know, I'm not worried about Zacha. Lindholm's kind of been the defensive Zacha, which is fantastic for my explaining here. You know, again, lots of hard minutes. But with Lindholm, where Zacha, it's like we're going to need a little finish on the offensive side. For Lindholm, it's we need more finish on the defensive side with the clearing attempts, right? Like, that's, it's kind of the two things. Look, I made it make sense. Holy shit, who saw that coming? But, like Zacha with that incredible, you know, behind-the-back pass, blind pass to Pasta, Lindholm has had some elite moments as well. He saved a goal in Game 2, and I know we lost Game 2, but I'm pretty sure this came when it was 2-1 for the Leafs, so before we had tied it up. And this would have put the course of Leafs ahead 3-1. I know you can do your own math, but I did it for you to save the time. And Lindholm completely saved a goal with elite skate and stick play right by the post. I don't remember who it was that was kind of wrapping around, but whoever it was, like, Lindholm was there. The positioning was beautiful. He was steady. He was sturdy. Oh, it was great. Completely saved a goal. You know, it's not like Lindholm hasn't had his great moments. It's just the tough moments really stand out, especially with defensemen, because it leads to, you know, their forecheck working and lots of zone time for the Leafs. So it stands out, but, you know, you got to trust Lindholm. We see that. He's got the elite stuff. It was great to see Freddie get a goal. I loved the shot. You know, one of those shots that should remind us that Samsonov can be beat, right? Shoot the puck, get the puck on net. You know, the game is decided by puck luck a lot of times, and you've got a goalie who I think could be very susceptible to puck luck. So let's take some chances. Brandon Carlo has been taking some chances, actually, man. He's been our best defenseman in the playoffs through these three games. I don't think there's many Bruins fans who would argue otherwise, to be honest with you. He's been just fucking fantastic, let alone scoring. Like, this is part of my favorite part of it has been, like, Carlo's been shooting. Like, I've never seen him shoot before, especially through the first two games. It was like every time the puck was around, he's like, fuck it, I'm shooting. And I was like, I'm here for this. This is fantastic. Carlo gets it. I'm going to keep that going. I got to say, I did feel bad for Lauko getting set in Game 3. I don't think it was his fault. I think sometimes adjustments have to be made, you know, and someone's got to come out for someone to go in. It happens. I thought Lauko was really good. Just a ball of energy in the good way, right? Energy with purpose. And I thought he was good. So I was surprised to see him out. It happens. I also know that he'll play again in the playoffs. I believe that fully. Actually, I was also kind of surprised that Grizz was set for Game 3 as well. I actually really liked Grizz's game in Game 1. Less in Game 2, but still. And then, you know, Andrew Peak goes and gets hurt. You know, that's week to week, which sucks balls to balls, but it is what it is. So, you know, with Peak being out, right away the depth is challenged. I wasn't expecting Grizz to be sitting in that situation. But Mason Lowry got his first playoff start. You know, that was pretty exciting. Bruins Twitter was very happy with it. I shared my concerns on Twitter, you know, about I don't know if he can handle the forecheck. I mean, that's really the main thing of it, right? Like, is he going to be able to handle that forecheck? Is he going to get just run over, railroaded? It could happen. It was pointed out to me, of course, that it could happen to Grizz as well, which is 100% correct. And also, I was reminded of Ottawa 2016 with Matt. I think it was 2016. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Mac, his first playoff, kind of got thrown into it. And, you know, even he grew over the length of that series. And so, you know, my mind was completely open going into game three. I'm not like, oh, shit, he's going to saw. No, it's like, prove me wrong. I want to be. And he wasn't great, but he was good. He was fine. You know, taking two penalties is a tough look. And it was a bad officiating night. Let's be clear. But he did take two penalties, but he didn't get run over. I thought he held his own, and I'm expecting to see him back there again in game four. I also imagine we'll see Weatherspoon again. Big Weatherspoon fan. I thought he was very good getting that start. You know, he's kind of the Andrew Peak replacement in that situation. And Weatherspoon, I think, is playoff built as well. Like, he doesn't mind getting dirty. You know, I got confidence in him. He'll do the things you need to do in the playoffs. And it feels as well like Bruins fans are very okay with Weatherspoon as well, right? Everybody wants their spoons. So here we are. We are getting our spoons. I wonder for game four if Grizz gets back in place of Shattenkirk, though. That's the one that I'm curious about. That could be a situation, I guess. Grizz goes in, Shattenkirk goes out, everything else stays the same. Shatty wasn't great in game three. And I think we know Monty has an itchy trigger finger for making changes. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll see that. As I alluded to, the officiating last night was bad. Like, it seemed like an all-timer. Maybe it wasn't, but in some of the moments, it was like, this is getting silly. Like, it was random calls, phantom calls, silly calls that you don't call in the playoffs. Like, little dinky holdings and hooks. You don't call that in the playoffs because there's going to be some real shit you need to call at some point or another with how intense those games get. But when you call those dinky kind of penalties, and now all of a sudden there's these more in-your-face penalties you should be calling, the refs are like, well, damn, we can't. If we sit here and call 8 to 10 penalties on both teams, no one's going to be happy about that. So they let a bunch of shit go. You know, like, it's bad. Officiating it's bad. I don't know. They got to do something about it. But, and, you know, it was also, from what I heard on I listened to a Washington sports podcast because it's mostly for Commander stuff, but they talk hockey here and there, and with the Capitals in the playoffs, they've been doing a bunch of stuff with hockey, and they were talking about the last game for the Rangers and the Caps game too, and how bad the officiating was, and 100% in both directions. Like, he pointed out two instances immediately of when Capitals should have got penalties. Like, this wasn't a biased take. This was a pretty honest take. And again, it was. But and then they also acknowledged the real truth, which is the fact that officiating is terrible for all of us. It affects all of our teams about the same. Like, you know, not literally to the whatever the fuck, but, you know, it affects all of us. You know, and it always, everyone feels like they're the worst, like the refs are the worst against their team. Everyone thinks that. Every fan base thinks that. At least we should say there are large factions of every fan base who believe this, right? And they use cherry-picked video clips as their proof. That's not going to work. It sucks for all of us. It's just bad officiating. That's what they need to fix. And, you know, well, again, that's an off-season thing we'll worry about. But when it's happening in the play, man, it's hard to watch because you're like, you see some of these calls and you're like, is that going to be the reason we don't go to the next round? Like, just, it's a harder on your head kind of thing dealing with it in the playoffs. It's a few non-Bruins things. There's been some crazy shit around the league and the playoffs here. Not the least of which, of course, is the stacked Golden Knights being up 2-1, 2-0 on Dallas, heading back to Vegas. Like, how is that not some bullshit? I know it's not against the rules. I know they're not doing anything illegal. But come on. It's got to feel a little icky that they... anyway, whatever. You know, nothing you can do about it. Vancouver's gonna lose. Oh my god, that makes me so happy. That fucking fan base. They were out there. They won game one of the first round, and they were out there like they had won the whole god. No wonder that fan base tore the city down to the studs. Look at them out there after game one of the first round, acting like they've won something. Oh boy. I think act like you've been there before has never been a better piece of advice. Oh, Vancouver. Fuck you. The Avs and Winnipeg. That's been some crazy hockey. Georgiev in that first game really, like, as a goalie fan, like, as a goalie stan, as a former goalie, I was offended by Georgiev's performance. Like, 7 goals on 23 shots. That's him. How does that happen in a professional league to a professional player? How does it happen? But the Avs being as good as they are and where they are right now with Georgiev, again, proves to us that, like, these guys, you can win with bad goaltending, but you got to be Avalanche good, not Toronto Maple Leaf good kind of thing, right? Like, it's wild what they won a Stanley Cup with Darcy Kuemper. You know, I guess that's like Trent Dilfer winning a Lombardi trophy with Baltimore that year. It's kind of akin to that, I guess. So it's been fun, and their second game was a fun one too as well. So that series is all knotted up, and a lot of man, this first round of the playoffs is nuts. It's just like all weekend just fucking hockey. It's kind of sad when it gets just chopped in half right away. You probably saw the thing on Twitter that went around with this guy. I know I shared it, and he tweeted, he was responding to somebody who, you know, it was somebody who said, you know, as a season ticket holder, they wanted to, you know, hold the team accountable to something, or they were complaining about something, whatever it was. And another fan jumped in and said that, like, your tickets are like in 328, you know, ooh, you bought a little package, you're not a real season ticket holder. And I, like, that shit pisses me off so much. I don't understand. Like, it's the worst kind of gatekeeping, because it's lame ass, completely arbitrary bullshit gatekeeping. Like, who in the living fuck is this guy to tell somebody that they're not a real fan? Oh, and he also pointed out that you're not. Oh, what was the line? I'm sorry. I forgot the really good part. He said, you're not a season ticket holder. You're poor. If you can afford to buy any number of tickets in a season, in a season ticket package to a professional sports league, you are not poor. My God. We talk about privilege and, you know, comes out sometimes. Man, did you ever watch Deadwood? I just watched Deadwood like over the last month or so. Insane. What a show. Like, I'm going to go back to it almost immediately, I think. It's going to be a shame forever. A TV lost an incredible show. We should have got at least 6 or 7 seasons of that. It's too bad. And I mentioned last week that I was going to, that Pearl Jam's new record, Dark Matter, was coming out. And I think I mentioned that I had tickets to go to a movie theater to see where you listen to the album in the movie theater with all the, you know, incredible surround sound and whatnot. Got to do that last Tuesday. It was really wicked. If you ever have an opportunity to do so, to do something like this, to sit in a movie theater and listen to an album, I recommend you do it. It was a really neat experience. Like, the album, once, of course, 2 days later, you know, we had the album in our hands, there's obviously a big difference between how it sounded. There, you know, we actually kind of commented on thinking that there wasn't as much of Jeff, not as much bass in the album. But now that I have the album and I can listen to it, you know, at home, nah, man, Jeff is all over it and very obvious. But when you're in that surround sound environment, things sound different, but really cool. So I don't know, whatever your band is, if you ever get a chance to do something like that, I definitely recommend doing it. And I just gotta say how incredible the new Pearl Jam record is. And I know I'm 100% Pearl Jam fanboy. Pearl Jam, I'm literally a fan club member. Like, I pay to be a fan of the band. But this is, like, actually, this album is that good. And I gotta say, the biggest thing for me with it has been the effect that it's had on my mental health. We forget sometimes what art can do for us, especially art that means something to us. And Pearl Jam meaning what they mean to me, for having them, you know, 25 years after kind of leaving their peak, right? Like the 90s, that's your Roman Empire era Pearl Jam, right? Like, outside of that, for them 25 years later to release something that is going to sit right behind those 90s records for their best is incredible. And the stages of their lives, like, you grow up with a band, it's really something. And this one, a lot of it just spoke to me, just different lines and songs, different, even sometimes little phrases, just a lot of things spoke to me. And I have felt a direct effect on my mental health. Like, it's like 100%. It's really, really something. It just, I don't know. I've listened to, I mean, you know, I've been dealing with, you know, my depression's been whooping my butt for a while. I've listened to all kinds of Pearl Jam. I've listened to all kinds of music, but having this new piece of art from them that was of a quality that we thought maybe we weren't going to get again, sounding as I don't know. It's something, you know. There's a lot to do with mental health, but art can help. All right. Well, now that we've checked in on me, my check-in this week is actually from my high take last week. So my high take last week was that this series was going to be a 5-game series. As far as I'm concerned right now, that take is a W. That's a dub. Bruins are up 2-1. Bruins are going to win the next 2 games. 5-game series. The math works. Do it yourself. 3 games. 2 more games. 5 games.
Knock it off, okay? I'm interviewing you.
No, you said that I'd be conducting the interview when I walked in here. Now, exactly how much pot did you smoke?
I got to say, when I had Bruins Luchador on a number of episodes a number of months back, and he was talking about the way he measures milligrams of edibles with cannabis that he takes is like in the hundreds up into the thousands. Like, you know, it got me a little more interested in edibles. I haven't really used them all that often, to be honest with you. And I decided to kind of give them more of a shot, and I gotta say, I was pretty impressed, to be honest with you. Like, I found it's kind of nice how it just comes up on you, and it's like you're just like, oh yeah, and it lasts a little longer. I don't know if it hits as high, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, especially if, you know, this is just something for, you know, helping you sleep and stuff like that too. So yeah, I don't know. You know, the flower is always the, you know, that's your classics. That's not going anywhere. But I think I understand the popularity of the edibles a little more now anyway. And now for this week's high take. Sheldon Keefe is a bitch.
Let him finish.
Yeah, I know. You're not fighting me on this one. I know normally I try to be, you know, more clever, you know, maybe a little more playful with my high takes. And because that's usually what comes when you're high, right? But this is just all that's been in my head. All I could think about, and just over and over again, after hearing him complaining about Brad Marchand drawing penalties and being elite at drawing penalties on a night when Brad Marchand didn't draw any penalties, The Bruins only drew two penalties, neither of which by Marchand, as I mentioned, while Keefe's Maple Leafs had five power plays and drew five penalties. Keefe has the balls to go out and to complain about Brad Marchand and the Bruins. Like, what the fuck? Every coach complains about the refs. Of course they do. It's the mind games. There are the experts at it, like Craig Berube, who literally cried his team to a Stanley Cup. Wild things can happen. Maybe Keefe is trying to do that. Personally, I think Keefe is just trying to get the attention off of him and the shit job that he's doing with the super expensive team in front of him. But, you know, he's like, hey, look over there. Oh, Marchand, guys, Marchand. Basically is what he's doing. That's a bitch move. And again, every coach is complaining about the refs, that's fine. But the way that Keefe did it on the night that he did it, it made no goddamn sense. Screams of desperation and screams of trying to save your own hide. So this week's high take, Sheldon Keefe is a bitch. This week's haiku was inspired by our captain and his clutch play in Game 3. Rat King Bert Flusy, tumble, rumble, game winner, cry of the captain.
I'm here. You got Q's, I got A's.
Did you say you've got AIDS?
No, I don't have AIDS. It's not what I said. Next question.
It's funny, you get to a point and you're like, man, I know there's like eight things I forgot to talk about. So much going on in playoff hockey, though, man. All right, so I do have one Q to A, and this Q is going to completely go in. You know, I'm going to take that A and I'm going to talk it out. So, you know, it's all going to blend into one right here. And this one's coming at me from Steve McEachern. Of course, you know him at SteveMacJE on Twitter. He got at me through his Fastcast, which if you're not, you know, signed up for, loved, liked, subscribed, and all that, go do so now. Steve will keep you informed. You're like, oh man, I forgot what that game was like. Pop in the Fastcast. Now you know. And Steve got at me and said, hey Jay, welcome back. Cheers, Steve. Very much appreciated. He said, I've got a cue. Is the goalie rotation out the window if Swayman continues his great play? I know it's been 1-1 all year, but can you go all the way with that? Keep hashtag preseason alive. So yeah, this is the thing I needed to talk out, because this is it feels like a big deal, you know. Game 4, you're up 2-1. Chance to, you know, chokehold on a series. So, do you ride the hot hand? Do you continue the rotation? You have not broke this rotation in months. The rotation was... this was why you did the rotation. This is why you haven't broken the rotation for months. So... is it overthinking to start suggesting that maybe Swayman should take game 4? I mean, we talked about if Swayman should take game 2. So, you know, it's something we were going to talk about one way or the other. So if Monty, if Linus gets the start in game 4, the rotation is there. And maybe that was the deal the whole time. The first four games, we're going to go 1-2, 1-2. And then after that, maybe it's more wide open. I mean, at some point, you have to feel like the coach has to have some, you know, say in it. Like, there's no way Monty gave them some sort of guarantee on the split, and there was no veering from it. Like, you know, that doesn't seem like it would happen. But would you do it for a game 4? You know, it's not like Ullmark was bad in game 2. He was the only reason that the game was close and that we actually had a chance to win it. He was the reason for that. So if you're afraid of Allmark in game four, I feel like that's maybe misplaced. So if you go to Allmark, if Allmark wins, the goalie rotation wins, I guess you would say, right? You won 3 out of 4 games rotating the goalies 1-for-1. You couldn't possibly ask for more in the playoffs. That would be amazing. Now, if the Bruins lose, and it's 2-2, we're headed back to Boston, and now it's a best-of-3, are you looking at Swayman at that point? Not again, because again, if we lose game four, I could just about guarantee it's not going to be Linus Ullmark's fault that happens. So it's not his fault that he has the 2 losses while Swayman has the 2 wins. But Swayman is playing better. I think we would, like, it just kind of going by the eye test, thinking about it, Swayman has looked locked in. But they also, like, it's not like they're not scoring on him, right? He hasn't been shutting them out and keeping them to 1 goal. He keeps them away from 3. I think that's, you know, maybe more of the goal, you know, for this Leafs team in the first place. Or are you going Swayman 5, Linus 6, Swayman 7? Like maybe that is the plan, to go straight through with it like that. I don't know. I think the real questions come up when you say, what if they, you know, Monty decides we're going to play the hot hand and we're going to Swayman in game 4? What if the Leafs win? Now you have 2 goalies, both coming off of losses, one of which is going to start, of course, game 5. And if Swayman loses game 4, does that mean you're right back to Linus for 5? Or is it, are you saying, look, we're going to ride Jeremy for a couple? Like, this is the thing with this, in this experiment, this incredible experiment of the goalie rotation. It's so incredibly easy to overthink and overanalyze. The opinions on Twitter are wide and strong right now when it comes to this. A lot of people really want Swayman to get game 4. They're convinced that that's the winning formula. And they might be right. I'm not sure. Part of me thinks, I'm 51-49 right now that Ullmark starts. I'm not saying that's what I think they should do, but that's where I am with what I think they're going to do. 51-49. And maybe that's strange. And I was actually the other way, just like a day, 2 days ago as well. 51-49 that Swayman should get the start. I don't think there's a wrong answer, to be perfectly honest with you. I have full trust in both of my goalies. I really do. If Linus plays game 4, I expect to win in game 4. Just as much as if Swayman plays. My expectations are going to be the same and my belief is going to be the same. So, I don't know. You know, is Swayman in the Leafs head? Maybe. I've suggested it before. I've had a lot of people say that, you know, kind of push back on it. So, you know, I've given myself a little more room to consider that a little more, of whether or not that's really something that, you know, gets into the heads of professional athletes. Especially when, like, the year before last, Swayman gave up a whole bunch of goals to them. So it's not like it's been a career thing, but, you know, regardless, I'm dying to find out. That's about it. I hate that we have to wait an extra night to get the game, because I'm dying to find out. I'm going to be fine, you know, with either one. You know, I think a lot of people are going to be upset if it's Linus. And I say upset in a soft way. I don't think there's anybody... you know there are. There's going to be people really upset about it. That's unfortunate. Hopefully they can, you know, get over that. But I also know there's going to be people that are, like, giddy about Swayman getting the start, when, again, there's no guarantees there either, right? Great goalie. But I know Berge has been, well, you know, the Debbie Downer of the goalie rotation talk. Every time people are like, oh, goalies and goalie hugs and goalie rotations, and everyone's happy and dancing, you know, in comes Burge.
Going your way, then along comes Debbie Downer. Always there to tell you about a new disease, a car accident, or killer bees. Who beg her to spare you, Debbie, please, but you can't stop Debbie Downer.
Doesn't like the goalie rotation. It's okay. Look, for all I know, Burge is going to be right about it. And I'm sure Burge thinks he's going to be right about it. So, I don't know. We're going to find out on Saturday night just what Monty's thinking and how this rotation is going to work. I guess last thing I would say about it too is, let's say Swayman gets the next two games and it's over in five, just as I predicted. Linus gets game one in the next series. Do you go jump right back to the rotation? Or are you suddenly riding Swayman again? I think you do the same thing. I think you get into the series, you let both goalies play a game, game one, game two, game three, and four. That's where you start having, you know, your decisions on if one goalie needs to be playing a little more or not for that series. I don't think you can get away from it entirely. Like, abandoning it seems like a bad idea. You know, adjusting it here and there, that seems like coaching. So, hopefully that's the way Monty goes. And my friends, that's going to do for this episode of The Baked Bear. I have been Jay Pike. You can find me on Twitter at @my_Bruins, the podcast itself at The Baked Bear Pod. You can always shoot me an email, bakedbearpod@gmail.com, and never be afraid to leave a rating and a review wherever it is you listen to your favorite pods, and this one as well. Later, taters. Go Bees! Glad I didn't record that.